Said one side of beef to another, I'll never take you as my lover. Said one side of beef to another, I just won't take you as my lover. Because a rib is just a rib when it falls into your bib, so I'll let it languish in the fridge.
Hello everybody, you are listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and sitting next to me is Mark, who is Spare Machine, and he is from the wonderful band Lesser Birds of Paradise.
Hello everybody.
That's very nice. He's a very nice gentleman. He is in a tie because he came from work, and unlike a lot of us, he has a very good job that's important to the world. He teaches ninth grade.
I do teach ninth grade, and I love it.
What got you into teaching? Or what made you want to get into teaching?
Yeah, that's a good question. My students ask me that question sometimes on those days when they're just like, man, you are having a rough day today, Mr. Janka. I remember, like, in eighth grade, it's common to do a project where you research a career. I did pilots because I wanted to be a pilot.
Do you have really good vision?
No, not really. I mean, it's all right, but I couldn't be a...
Okay.
Yeah. So at that point, I remember seeing a girl in my class who did teacher, and I thought, wow, that is really not the right career choice. But then when
for
I got
her.
Into
her...
For just
for
I thought,
anybody.
I thought in general,
okay,
teachers aren't really having a good time at what they do. But by the time I became a sophomore in high school, I started reading books. It was American Lit class, so I got to read Catcher in the Rye. And I tell my students this when I see that they're reading it, and I don't really understand it, but for some reason I feel like that was like the point where I was like, oh, like you can learn stuff in school that means something to you. And even Catcher in the Rye, the themes in Catcher in the Rye in general, I think are very teacherly, doing something humble.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it kind of started my, and I had a really wonderful teacher, Amy Haga is her name. Shout out to Amy Haga.
That's very nice of you.
And, yeah, so I guess it started around there. Although when I went to college, I wasn't really sure about, I just was an English major. I wasn't an education major.
All right. So you had I followed the same route as you. And you're a lot happier than me. So a completely different, well, kind of following that question. The bar I work at, and people see me reading, and recently I've been reading J.D. Salinger's Nine Stories.
Ah.
And I can't like it. I'm in story four right now, and like I can't finish it. Like I just don't like it. As an English teacher, as somebody that was changed by Catcher in the Rye, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, I don't know that you're doing anything wrong.
Okay, good.
I remember reading that too, as a person who felt like he was kind of transformed by Catcher, and I didn't get it really either. I was like, there's a lot of rich people in this.
That's
and
what I'm
not
thinking too.
Really, and I don't know what they're talking about.
Thank you, sir. Franny and Zoe, I kind of had that problem too. Not as much. It was easier to read, but I also was a lot younger. I was in high school writing these books, and now I'm far from high school. Do you think that might be my problem?
I have heard the fact that you're far from high school
the
might be
why. The
fact
that I'm far from high school, and I can't dig Salinger.
Yeah, I have not read Catcher in the Rye as anyone older than 20, and I am much older than 20. and I have heard that when adults go back and read it, Holden is an idiot and doesn't really have any insight into anything, which maybe is what makes him attractive to teenagers.
Well, yeah, that's youth. I mean, I understand what's attractive about that. I'm kind of glad to know that I'm not crazy here.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people that would agree.
Here's the problem, though. I'm not digging a lot of the new Wes Anderson films either for the same reason. And all those people are like, no, you're an idiot. Those are great films. I just can't get it.
Let's disagree about that a little. Well, here. Well, I'll start off and then we'll...
Please.
So, I watched the film. I got a copy of Rushmore.
Yes.
From a friend who has a relative who, like, is part of the Academy Awards thing.
Okay, so you got a screener
copy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched it once and I thought, yeah, that was kind of okay. But then I found myself thinking about it a lot. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, I agree. That is a great film.
And then
I love that film.
Yeah, and I like the Royal Tannenbaums. When we got to Steve Zissou, I kind of was like, this is the Royal Tannenbaums again underwater. However, and I thought watching it, like, I'm not into this movie. I mean, it's all right. It's kind of funny. I like the uniforms, standard Wes Anderson thing.
Yeah, and the David Bowie covers.
Yeah, that was really great.
Those were, but like, come on, as a plot device.
Yeah,
it was just there.
However, at the end of the movie, when I'm throughout the whole thing, twice this happened to me. I'm like, nah, I'm not into this. It's all right, whatever. It's kind of, I've already seen this. when he's with everybody in his little submarine, and he says, he asks rhetorically if the shark remembers him. Do you think he remembers me? I started crying both times. One time I was in a theater and I kind of held it back, and one time I was at home and I just went ahead and like, and I don't know why. So I think there's something in there still. I do think it's weaker than a lot of the other. It certainly doesn't.
What about the most recent one? The Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah. I still enjoyed that, but I'm going to say I understand where you're coming from, because I am enjoying the same tricks that I enjoy. Like, it's like that band that you like that writes one song, but you just totally love that one song.
I get it. That's my Harvey Danger, you know.
Yeah.
I understand that, but here's the thing. There's something worthwhile about all these films. I completely agree. It's just that Rushmore was like setting the bar so high in my head. Yeah. But that's, to me, that's a perfect film. There's not one wasted shot where it seems that everything else is just a series of really neat shots surrounded by like cool looking things.
Yeah, with gadgets and.
And that's kind of how I feel about the Salinger thing. It's like, I get Catcher in the Rye could be Rushmore. I get that, and because the character is that age, it's acceptable.
Uh-huh.
But now that we're all adults and we recognize that we're all adults, it's just, you got to move on, sir.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's also because I'm watching The Wire.
Or right now. let me pitch this: if you're reading stuff and you're not like really digging the Salinger stuff. Wait, so when, how did you, you've read Catcher, how old were you when you
I read Catcher when I was, I think, a freshman, either freshman, eighth grade, sophomore, right around.
Okay, and so you haven't revisited it since.
I have not revisited it since.
That might be
But I watched Igby Goes Down, which to me was the film version of that book.
That's the Claire Danes movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like it, sir.
I watched that movie because I like Claire Danes quite a bit, and my TiVo knows that, so it recorded it. And, yeah, the whole movie, I was kind of disappointed by it too. Although I would like to, if I ever, Claire Danes, if you're listening to this, if we ever run into each other, I'd love to have a milkshake with you.
That's very nice.
Isn't there a scene where
they
have a milkshake?
There's many a scene where they have a milkshake.
That just seemed like really nice, that part.
And then she sleeps with his brother, which is played by Ryan, who used to be, Ryan, what's his name? He used to be married to, whatever. Anyways, I like how I invited one of my favorite songwriters over, and we're talking nothing about literature, or we're kind of talking about literature, or songs. Anyways, here's a basic question. We talked about...
Actually, can I interrupt you?
Yes, of course.
There was one thing I wanted to say. So, back on the Catcher thing.
Yes.
We'll wrap it up with this. But I just read... I'm in a book club in the town that I live in, Oak Park. It's called Genre X. Great people. If you're in the Oak Park area, look it up on the internet.
Where do you guys meet?
We meet at Molly Malone's in Forest Park.
Yes.
You know it well, I'm sure.
Sadly, I do.
In the Snug. And we read a book by a Chicago writer, Joe Mino. Or
which Mino book? I love Mino.
Hairstyles at the Dam.
Hairstyles at the Dam. I taught an after-school class in Little Village Lawndale High School, and I had my students read whatever they wanted, and I would provide the book. You just have to read it. And I recommended that to every single female, and they all loved it.
Yeah?
I love that book. I remember...
To me, it's kind of a... Sorry to interrupt you, but to me, it's kind of a... It's kind of a guy e-book, which is something you have with Catcher, too. But
I disagree. I mean, because he writes... I think the females, though there are not as many, he writes them very well.
Yeah,
and unlike Catcher, I think that that protagonist is quite feminine.
The protagonist in Catcher, or the protagonist in
no, the protagonist in Hairstyles, because he's and okay, this is totally like me in high school. Read into it. I kind of felt like that guy where like I wasn't completely metal, I wasn't completely punk. So like I'll have my I had my Nirvana pin, like he had his Misfits, but I still didn't have ripped jeans or dyed hair.
Yeah,
so maybe that's why I dug it a lot.
Yeah, I loved it to death. So, and as I'm reading it, and I actually, one of my students was carrying the book around like on the first day of school, and then it was going to be our book club book, and I was like, oh wow, that's awesome. So there is a little scene of people at Roe Clark, where I teach, Roe Clark Math and Science Academy. We're great. reading Hairstyles, and I took some students to Quimby's. He read recently at Quimby's.
Yeah, he just did.
And
that's probably the one event you could take them, because all the rest of the readings are in bars and stuff.
Yeah, even that one was a little risque because Quimby's has some stuff on the shelves that, you know,
if you
a teacher
been...
shouldn't have their students around, but they were lectured on that prior. Everything was cool. There was the F word quite a bit, and it was very cute, actually, because we have pretty strict language policies at our school, and all of the students... Not by Joe Mino, actually. It was by one of the opening readers. But were very embarrassed for me that I had to hear the F word so many times in a row. They're like, Mr. Dank, it's okay.
If you haven't been to Quimby's, it's probably the best zine place in the Midwest. I can't think of a better place that, you know, has running water and is clean than Quimby's that sells zines. And their selection is amazing. It's a very small bookstore. It's about the size of, like, an apartment in the city. Yeah. It's very small. And they do the readings in the same place. There's this little three-step stage, And there's about four rows of six chairs, so it's very, very small, very intimate. And just to the right of you is porn, but it's not normal porn. It's like cartoonish porn or fetish porn. It's not, you're not going to see any Playboys, but you'll see, I don't know, a cartoon version of a Hispanic crossdresser getting whipped by an African-American transvestite with the mask of an Asian businessman on him.
Yeah.
So think about that, and then there's high school kids.
Right. And actually, people...
That was a very long tangent. I'm sorry.
No, it's a beautiful tangent. The people running the store were very sensitive also. When they came in with the kids, they're like, are they with you? You know? And I was like, yeah, they've been talked to about it. And I asked him on the way out if everything was good, and he did say he saw one kid pick up a book he shouldn't have, but he put it down right away. So they were well behaved.
Very wonderful students. Right. You're actually the third teacher / professor we've had on the show.
Wow.
You're the first one to mention where you work. That means you actually feel like you're doing a good job. Because the other two aren't completely satisfied.
Oh, I am. I love Roe Clark. It's my first year there, and it's tough. I'm working hard. I don't know if I'm doing the best I can do. I don't know if I'm as good as I could be, but all teachers should be always striving for more, like anyone who wants to be great at what they do. Yep, the school's wonderful.
You used to teach English, and now you do not.
Right, I teach civics now.
How is it going from teaching English to teaching civics?
It was tough for me, just because I had to learn a lot, and I was kind of, I've been teaching for a long time, so I was very confident in the breadth and the depth of my knowledge. I could kind of think on my feet and stuff, whereas with civics, I had to learn it a few days ahead of the students, feel good about it, teach it, and there are lots of times where students ask me questions and I just had to be, I don't know the answer to that.
When you say you don't know the answer to that, do they just harp on you or do they let it go and you have an answer tomorrow?
I tried to set it up at the beginning of the year saying, this is new to me, I'm good at this, but I might not know everything. I also say, my wife is a historian, I'll call her if we have any real troubles, although I never did that actually.
That's very nice. Do the students want to know everything about your personal life?
They do ask a lot about personal stuff, and I've found that it's not bad to share some of that with students, but you can't just lay it all out. You gotta let them know you in little pieces, and it does build a bond, but reinforces like building trust with your students. So
okay.
You can't just be like on the first day of school, tell them everything about yourself. Anybody asks you a question. But if you build a relationship with a student and they're genuinely interested in how you've managed to work out this life that you have, and I think there is a real genuine interest, like, okay, this guy, Mr. Janka, he's all right. He yells at me sometimes, but you know, he's doing his job. They kind of, and I remember being like this in high school, you're looking to these adults and thinking about what type of life am I going to sort out for myself, and why not try to pass on a little bit of that wisdom in the right amount, at the right times, teachable moments, we call them.
I call it the dangerous minds moment, stand and deliver. how long have you been to teaching? Been a teacher?
I've been a teacher, this is my 8+4 +1+1th year.
Wow, that's a lot of
14?
Years.
14? Does that come out to 14?
Sure. You're the teacher. It's your fault if it's not. The longer you teach, do you find it harder to connect with the students or easier, or does it matter?
I actually think it's easier for me now than it was when I started. I don't know if I know the reason for that, except that maybe I know better how to play that game and when it's appropriate to make those connections.
Yeah.
What are the best topics and ways to do it, whereas when you're just starting, you're closer in age to the students sometimes by just, you know, 4 or 5 years difference, but you can't rely on that because you're not doing your job very well if you're just like their friend,
of course.
Of older friend, and new teachers I think are very conscious of that. Actually, I think it's easier as an adult because you can just play like, oh, you're so different from me, but look, we have these things in common. That works, I think.
Okay, like, do they know that you play music?
They do. Yes, they do.
Have they asked you to play? Have you played them anything?
I've played some of them, some stuff. Actually, one of the things I like about Roe Clark is they kind of encourage teachers. This is sort of like your program, I think.
Okay.
When you said we were talking about your program and the idea behind it, it made me think of this. We have a thing called seminar that, like, it's only 8 Fridays per semester, so it's not a lot, but they have you have an hour and a half, and you teach whatever you love. So teachers have lives. They do things besides their own classes.
So
you
every single something. Teacher teaches whatever they want. One, like what? So it's six, how many quarters do you have or whatever?
We have four quarters, so it's like 16 times a year.
So 16 times. What do you teach? Do you do something different every time? Does it matter?
Well, you sort of, by semester, create a little curriculum.
Okay.
And so mine was actually supposed to be Chicago Sound Series, which is connected to the label that the Lesser Birds are on. It's called Contraphonic, and they have this thing called Chicago Sound Series, mm-hmm. where they get, it's, you can go to their website, by the way, contraphonic.com.
We'll plug it all at the end.
to check that out. But it's basically, the idea is they want artists through the medium of sound to represent something about Chicago. We didn't quite get that far with my summer. I was a little too ambitious. But what it sort of turned into, the more realistic setting of the bar, was we have a Mac laptop. So it was it became a GarageBand.
Nice.
Like learning GarageBand seminar, learning about mixing and panning.
Yeah.
And because there's all those loops and things, you can be anybody and drag a loop up in there and come up, make some tracks, talk about what you're going for with that. And so that's what I've been doing this year. But at one point, I was asking students to share, and I was getting a lot of, not a lot of resistance, but I could see some shyness as to, like, you know, we'll plug it into the speakers in the room and everyone will listen to it and you'll tell us about it. So I said, okay, I'm asking you to take risks. So I played a few songs on the guitar for them.
What'd they say?
I had a really great group that first semester. They were very nice, very sensitive. They did, one girl, very insightful, and I also set it up with, like, you know, be nice to me. I'm different than you. I'm old and I'm bald, and this is the type of stuff that I like. I know it's not the type of thing that you necessarily like, but she did say that in all the songs you played, I played three songs, the speaker loses something, which is something that, like, I wasn't even aware of.
Yeah,
and she was right. So maybe that's something I need to think about. I don't know.
It's wonderful to do that.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, continue.
No, that's all. I've also played, some of the students have been taking to open mics.
Really?
Yeah, I have this series of unofficial, well, they're official, but they're sort of unofficial field trips called Riding the Bus with Mr. Janka. That's, which is basically, we go to something cool and we take the bus or the train, like the Joe Mino reading. And I've been taking kids to the Old Town School's teen open mic on Saturdays. A handful of kids go each time. And then there was another open mic that a friend of mine set up in the basement of a church. It's a little bit looser than the teen open mic.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've seen me play a couple songs there.
That's
I don't
wonderful.
Play at the teen open mic because I'm not a teen. But
that'd be very odd.
It would be.
No, but this is wonderful. You sound like a public service announcement to become a teacher.
It can be wonderful. It's a lot of hard work, though. It's very, very hard work. Anybody out there thinking, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Anybody out there thinking, oh, man, I'm going to leave the rat race. I'm going to be a teacher. I'll let my summers off. Yeah, just don't even bother. Or do it and fail, because that's not how it works at all.
Speaking of summers off, do you have your summers off?
I do.
Do you tour? Do you travel at all?
We had the few tours that the Lesser Birds have done were mostly in the summer, yeah.
Let's get to the Lesser Birds. How long have the Lesser Birds of Paradise been around?
Officially since around 1999.
That's pretty long. It's a 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Do you have anything special planned?
We don't. I don't know if we know the exact date, but our first recordings were started in the winter of 99.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that you're older, the older I get, the more mellow I want to make the music. You already are a mellow band.
Yeah.
Do you now become a metal band? Do you just switch?
Sometimes I wish we would just do that for fun. We had a fake band called The Wads. I think there's an actual real band called The Wads that was supposed to be like our little sort of heavier ego, alter ego. Didn't really work out, though. We're just better at picking and talking real softly, picking the guitar.
You do pick the guitar and you do sing softly and you used to talk softly. What drives you to do this? I mean, to me, okay, when you were in high school or you were in college, when you started playing guitar, who were the people that made you want to play guitar? Instinctually, not thinking like, wow, this is a cool David Byrne song. No, more I'm going to say it's not pure, but something more pure than that.
I was kind of I'm a late comer to a lot of things. So in high school, I didn't really start listening to what I would call the cool music or the music that really was more than a, commercial or something to me, till probably about my senior year in high school when I got a CD player, because it was a long time ago. And I didn't have any CDs. So I went to the store and I bought one of those Sire sampler CDs, because regular CDs were like so expensive. I was like, screw that. I'm just going to pay $8 for this instead of $16 for that. And it was a bunch of stuff that I sort of knew Depeche Mode was on there. There was some weird mix. I thought it'd be real cool, like the guy who had the weird mix of that. Wasn't really that cool, but The Replacements, who I had never heard of, had Can't Hardly Wait on one of those. And that song, I didn't even know what he was saying through half the words. I remember in my physics class, like, writing out the words, and later on when I finally knew what they were, I got half of them wrong. But whatever it was, it spoke to me. And that's when I felt like it was kind of a catcher maybe moment.
No. I like how you were like, oh, there wasn't anything cool. I just listened to The Replacements. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, but I was in high school, you know, they were like, I was like almost out of high school.
Yeah, but The Replacements are a college, post-college band anyways. Okay. I mean, no 13-year-old's like doing like, oh, I could totally understand about riding the bus. No,
yeah, good point.
you nailed it right there. And I don't want to, I don't know if this is an insult or a compliment, but I could definitely hear that influence. I mean, if your student said that you three songs and all mentioned Loss.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Like, you and Westerberg have a lot in common then.
Wow, I'll take that's great.
I think it's a wonderful thing. You are a very good performer live. The few times I've seen you guys, I've seen the Lesser Birds, and I've seen you play actually with someone, and it's with Branches, actually.
Yeah, Ben.
With Ben, yeah. And that was a very wonderful show. But it's extremely like calming and stuff. So I'm never calm. I don't know how you do it. So really, what I want to know is it easy to sing in front of people now that because you're a teacher? I mean, is it as scary, or is it just like you could do anything because you've already dealt with 30 students every day? I couldn't go sing my songs in front of people.
Yeah, that's a good question. I until this year, I didn't really see too much of a connection there. Just the atmosphere at Roe Clark is very much gives you room to kind of be. There are standards on it as a teacher how you should be and what they expect, but there's also kind of built into the culture that you are you and you figure out like what your strengths are, and you play to those strengths. You still got to get all this other stuff done, mm-hmm. but we want you to play to those strengths. I'm not sure that I was ever, in my years of teaching, encouraged that way. And I think that's sort of what has happened with, like, I would love to be in a band that's like The Replacements, but there are other people who will do that way better than me. That's not where my strengths are. It took me a while to figure that out. Another band that I loved when I was growing up, and literally would have like daytime fantasies about like maybe one of the guitar player breaking his finger so I could be in the band, was called the Vulgar Boatmen. They're from Indianapolis, and they used to come to Chicago like once a month when I was in college. And I would be in a band that's exactly like the Vulgar Boatmen. I can play all those chords. I can say things that rhyme, but like I just knew I wasn't capturing it. So I think I became more confident and better as a performer when I realized what my limitations were and what my strengths were. And part of that for me is like I can sing like seven notes, and I shouldn't be trying to sing notes that aren't those seven notes. Just flipping the order around or put different chords under it or whatever.
But how did you figure that out? You said it took a while. I mean, when did you start it? You obviously didn't sound like this. How did the progression unfold?
Yeah, that was through performing, but probably more specifically, rather than performing at proper gigs, performing at open mics. And I love open mics. I know that for some people it's really rough, because you're not going to see everything that you're not going to see what you like all the time. And it might be, maybe you might be making me think, there might be a teacher aspect to that too, because what I like about it is I like seeing people figure themselves out, like when they're performing, sort of like figuring out what exactly it is they're trying to say, and just getting up in front of someone, even at an open mic, getting on that stage, you are then saying, you are a symbol of some kind, which is not something I like to think about very much because it's kind of weird, but it is. Like, you get on the stage, and now suddenly, like, what you do, how you move, whether you talk to the audience or look at your shoes, like, that all is communicating something. And I think through open mics, I just learned about like what sort of worked. And you can play at an open mic and nobody can be listening to you. And learning how to deal with that a little bit, like you can't hear yourself. Figuring out like the times when nobody's listening, but suddenly everybody is listening for a second. Like, what did you say? What were you doing then? How are you acting? And it's sort of, maybe it's like a classic positive reinforcement type thing. I don't know.
It's very ballsy to do that.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing to do.
And it also, right. So then it does make it better when you are in a sort of a more ideal condition for performing. You've sort of already done the heavy lifting at the hard, the tougher rooms.
So now you're playing, not more or less, but you're playing some solo gigs now.
Yeah.
Any reason behind this other than scheduling? I mean.
Yeah. Essentially, as the Lesser Birds have become older, we've all, it's just hard for us to all kind of do stuff at the same time. And it was just sort of a, like, there were times when I was sort of playing out as Mark from the Lesser Birds, but it, I don't know, it didn't seem fair quite or respectful maybe to the other people. And I'm like, even when I play as Spare Machine, a lot of times I'm playing songs that might become Lesser Bird songs or are Lesser Bird songs. But it just didn't seem like, it seemed like false advertising. To
I understand that. Yeah. We keep coming back to the fact that everyone's getting older, and that's normal and natural, obviously. But when you're just starting out in a lot of bands, the whole point is to make it, quote unquote, make it. But you seem to be very either happy or somewhat happy in your job, your day job, and it seems that the goal of the music isn't necessarily to make anything of it other than to make it itself, like to make the music itself.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think we've ever really, I mean, we've always wanted, like, maybe our biggest, most ambitious goal, which we didn't meet, was like, we wish we had a booking agent, but it never really happened. We don't have the kind of draw for a booking agent, probably. But yeah, even when we started and we were younger and had more time to drive around, I don't know, once I became a teacher, I was like, I'm a teacher, that's my job.
So tomorrow you can either go on tour, still teach, and make roughly the same amount. What are you going to do?
Tomorrow? I'd have to finish the school year.
Okay, first. Okay. It comes. You have the choice. You get the option on July 15th, and you have to go back September 1st. What do you do?
So is this a year thing? Like,
it's a year thing.
I know that I'm going to make.
You will make exactly the same amount of money, cent for cent, if you start September 1st and you end June 1st, roughly.
Wow, that's a tough.
What do you do?
That's a tough call. I would. If you could guarantee that I get my job back.
Yes, you can guarantee.
All right. I would probably do it. Because,
really?
Just because I do enjoy teaching, and that is who I am, but you don't have that kind of opportunity. Like, there will always be kids that need to learn about civics.
That's true.
I'd probably take that.
Can we talk about living in Oak Park?
Sure.
You live in Oak Park by choice. Is this correct?
This is somewhat correct. I live in Oak Park. I would say that now, but I've moved to Oak Park because I got a kind of a gig as a... I live in the basement of a building of condominiums, and I'm the guy who, like, vacuums and cuts
currently
the grass.
Now?
Currently, right now.
Really?
Yep. So I don't have to pay rent and get a little stipend. Everybody in the building is very nice. I love living there. And it, you know, it just allows us to save some bread for buying a place.
Well, then I take it back. Then this makes complete sense. How do you fall upon that job?
When I worked at a school near Oak Park previously, a friend of mine worked there. She lived in River Forest, which is kind of one neighborhood over. And she knew the guy who had it previously, and he was leaving. She's like, you're thinking about moving out to this area. So I guess we were thinking about moving out to the area anyway. Why don't you take this job and save some money? So we did.
Wow, that's very awesome. Okay, so that makes complete sense. Anyways, I used to live in Oak Park. You live in Oak Park now. Is it harder to, like, perform out now that you live there?
No, not really, actually.
Okay, good.
I lived like in Andersonville or Rogers Park for a short while.
And I actually think it's easier to perform out if you're in Oak Park than Rogers Park a lot of the time.
Like, I get to everywhere faster
comparable.
As I did, because they're so far north and everything's sort of in the center there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not really any harder, I would say.
That's good. We're going to plug the show after I ask you the last question, and it's going to be from the Kids Book of Questions, Gregory, by Gregory Stack, PhD. So I need you to pick a number between 1 and 260.
Speaking of PhD, congratulations to my wife.
There
who just,
you go.
Did her defense today. She's now doctor.
Doctor of wife. What?
Public history.
Really?
Yeah.
So she can come into your class and do a much better job than you.
Probably, yeah.
That's got to be hard.
It is.
Where did she get it from?
Loyola.
Good for her. How'd you guys meet?
We met in high school.
Actually. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we met in high school.
The fact that you are both in education is against the high school myth that you should be unemployed and or...
Sad. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think technically we didn't go on our first date till I had just the summer after I graduated. So maybe that made us...
High school or college?
High school. So maybe that made...
No, that's still high school, sir.
Oh, really?
Oh, come on. That still counts. That's very romantic.
Thank you.
I think it is.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
That's good.
Well, pick a number, sir. 1 to 260. Congratulations to the doctor.
123.
123.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a wonderful day. I'm sorry that you had to come here to do this. Number 123. If you could do one thing you are not allowed to do now because you are too young, what would you pick?
Wow. Things that I'm too young for, I don't think about very much. I would... I'd go to McDonald's in Andersonville on Clark and Bryn Mawr and hang out with all the, I think, Chinese men that are retired and read the paper there, drink coffee, and talk about something. I don't know what they're talking about.
So you would just hang out. You'd essentially live out a Seinfeld episode.
Yes, I guess so.
That's not a bad life.
Not bad.
Thank you for coming by and doing this.
Thank you for having me.
You were a wonderful guest, I would just like to say.
And you were a wonderful host.
No. Don't lie.
It's love fest.
You do important work. I'm serious. You do important work that every single person could be either envious of or aspire to, and that's wonderful. And you make good music. The most important word in that was good. And you are the least sleazy you could possibly be, still a musician.
All right.
It's very, cool. Very impressive. So I'm going to plug something that has nothing to do with us.
Okay.
But on Joe's Pub, or Joe's Pub has this series. I think it's called Joe's Pub. I'm pretty sure I'm getting it correct. It's this thing in New York City, and it's kind of like a variety show. And Joe Mino, somebody that we were talking about, is performing. It's June 7th at the Charleston, a wonderful bar. I think it's June 7th. Look up Joe's Pub or just search Joe Mino online. You'll find it's the first thing that pops up. And Daniel Knox, a friend of the show, he's also playing that show. It'll be a very good gig. And then
Daniel's so great. I played with him before.
He is great. Thank you, sir, for mentioning that. He played a You, Me, Them, Everybody show May 4th. Very, very well attended. Thanks to everybody that came out to that. Anyways, in a few days from now, Monday, June 1st, there's going to be 6 stand-up comedians at the Hungry Brain. All of them are quite good. You can watch footage of every single one of them on the webpage. And then on June 8th, Spare Machine and Ty Maxson. I'm probably messing up his name. What is it?
Ty Maxson.
Is it Ty Maxson? I kept spelling. I just call him Ty. I think it's Maxson. I'm like 90% sure, but I kept putting him as Dixon.
That's definitely not Dixon.
Yeah, and I realized that's wrong. It's Maxson. So these two gentlemen will be playing at the Hungry Brain on Monday, June 8th. It'll be a lovely evening. Come on by. We're going to close this with a song from Spare Machine. Mark, thank you once again.
Thank you, Brandon.
That was like a minute of me thanking people and making it odd. So once again, thank you for listening, and have a good one.
My cat left a snowbird lying at my door, and I don't miss you anymore. My cat left a snowbird at my door today, and I never loved you anyway. Said one side of beef to another, I'll never take you as my lover. Said one side of beef to another, I just won't take you as my lover. Because a rib is just a rib when it falls into your bib, so I'll let it languish in the fridge. Yeah, a rib is just a rib unless it's holding in a heart, and you, friend, lack that vital part. And a heart is not a heart unless it's bursting at the seams, plus all those fussy parts between. And I think that you know just exactly what I mean when I say those fussy parts between. The fussy parts between turn us into drama queens, and there ain't hive enough for two. Yeah, the fussy parts between always skip to the best scenes, and all their material's blue. My cat left a snowbird lying at my door, and I don't miss you anymore. My cat left a snowbird at my door today, and I never loved you anyway. And a heart's not a heart unless it's bursting at the seams, plus all those fussy parts between. And I think that you know just exactly what I mean when I say those fussy parts between. Fussy parts between turn us into drama queens, and there ain't hive enough for two. The fussy parts between always skip to the best scenes, and all their material's blue. The fussy parts between turn us into drama queens, and there ain't hive enough for two. Yeah, the fussy parts between always skip to the best scenes, and all their material's blue. Oh, the fussy parts between. Thank you.